From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Bush stepped out of the Washington Beltway today and into Campaign 2004. Speaking in front of the New Hampshire Air National Guard in Portsmouth, New Hampshire today, the president came out swinging.
I took this office to make a difference, not to mark time. I came to this office to confront problems directly and forcefully, not to pass them on to other presidents and other generations.
And the next year, Americans will decide if they like the job he's doing. There is positive movement in the economy, but tough numbers, too. The numbers from Iraq, $87 billion, and the regular death toll are not popular, and the president's poll numbers are markedly down. But George Bush has shown himself to be a fighter, and he struck a fighting pose today in New Hampshire, where he laid out the message and image he is bound to carry across the country over the next year. On Point was on the scene today, and in this hour, we'll bring you voices from New Hampshire, the president's, and American voters. Tonight on Point, George W. Bush wading into his re-election campaign, and what awaits him there. Did you hear the president's speech today? Did you like what you heard? Is the no regrets, no apologies message the right one for the president in 2004, the right one for the country? And what about those Democratic challengers? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us tonight from San Francisco is Richard Dresner, founder of Dresner Wickers and Associates, a national Republican consulting firm. He's consulted to GOP election campaigns across the United States for more than 30 years. Good evening and welcome, Richard Dresner.
How are you?
Great. Thanks a lot for joining us. Also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Jack spent the day speaking with New Hampshire voters during the president's visit, and we'll hear more from him in a moment, but it's good to have you on board, Jack.
Thank you, and welcome to our guest.
But first tonight, let's hear some of the president's message today. Speaking in front of the New Hampshire Air National Guard, President Bush spoke directly to mounting concern over the Iraq War.
I acted because I was not about to leave the security of the American people in the hands of a madman. I was not about to stand by and wait and trust in the sanity and restraint of Saddam Hussein. So our coalition acted in one of the swiftest and most humane military campaigns in history. And 6 months ago today, the statue of the dictator was pulled down. Who can possibly think that the world would be better off with Saddam Hussein still in power? Surely not the dissidents who would be in his prisons or end up in mass graves. Surely not the men and women who would fill Saddam's torture chambers or the women in his rape rooms. Surely not the victims he murdered with poison gas. Surely not anyone who cares about human rights and democracy and stability in the Middle East. There's only one decent and humane reaction to the fall of Saddam Hussein. Good riddance.
George Bush wading into his re-election campaign today in New Hampshire. I'm joined by Richard Dresner and Jack Beatty. Richard Dresner, I'm sure you were listening on today. You've been watching the president and his poll numbers in recent weeks. An NPR poll out this morning shows that Americans who think the country's on the wrong track now amount to 53% of respondents. That's about, and 39 think it's going in the right direction. That's just about reversed from 6 months ago. How do you assess where the president stands today, a kind of maybe a year and a month or so in advance of his reelection date?
Well, I think we're back where we were at the last election. I think that most of what happened after 9/11 gave him artificial ratings one way or the other. And I think that really his administration is going to rise or fall on the economy. And certainly we've been getting some very different, very good news on that level the last few weeks.
And his message in New Hampshire today, the the bold, unapologetic, steady as she goes, George Bush as a consultant. What's your thought? Will that sell? Is that the way to go?
Well, I think the war in Iraq is a very complicated situation, but certainly the part of the message that says the world is a better place without Saddam Hussein is undeniable. The next problem becomes how do we get help from other countries and the rest of the world in managing the situation there?
Jack
Beatty, So
you think on balance?
I think the message today was appropriate, and it's almost mm-hmm. It's hard to disagree with it.
Mm. Jack, you were in the streets of New Hampshire today, talking with voters who were watching and listening, and sometimes praising and sometimes protesting President Bush. What was the tenor? New Hampshire's an early battleground state. Of course, the president's got the Republican primary, but still, it's where early views count for a lot. What were you hearing?
Well, I was in Manchester, across from the Holiday Inn, where the president spoke to the Chamber of Commerce. And what I was hearing really was something we don't hear much of. That is to say, ordinary citizens, albeit highly informed and dedicated citizens who taking time off to demonstrate, arguing for their candidates, making the best case for their candidates. And it occurred to me that is often something done by consultants. It's done by talking heads. It's done by people like myself in the chattering classes. But here were genuine voters saying, this is why I like this guy, the president, the Democrats. And it was just so refreshing to hear rational cases made by ordinary voters and with enthusiasm for their candidates.
Jack, we've got the tape from some of those conversations, Jack, and I want to listen to it tonight, along with hearing some more from the president, and then get your thoughts on what you heard today and get Richard Dresner's thoughts as well, and thoughts from our listeners. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Jack, one of the first interviews you did was with Don LaFave of Bow, New Hampshire. He's a Bush supporter. You asked him, what has Bush accomplished in his first term?
Well, I think the most important thing you could say is he's the first president in as long as I can remember who wasn't the paper tiger that all of the other presidents have been. When somebody came and did something to our country, he didn't just say, don't do that again. That was naughty. He actually went to town and reacted the way a strong leader should react. So I think if he has a legacy from his first 4 years, it should be, I stood up for this country of the United States. I protected it. I protected its citizens, just as I said or promised I would in my oath of office.
And you don't think a Democratic president, having lost 3,000 people in the World Trade Center, wouldn't have attacked Afghanistan?
Well, I only know.
That's support it, the majority of them.
No, I understand that, and it's hard to say exactly what a Democratic president would have done, but we could take a look at what the Democratic president did for the years prior to that. We bombed an aspirin factory and, on and on and on. So this is the first time I can look out at the world and say, we're no longer a paper tiger.
Yes, I see that. How about term two? What does he say? Here's what I want to accomplish in term two. What would you want him to say?
Well, I'd like to think we're going to have a safer country. I don't think it'll ever be like it was in the days of old. Terrorism will always be an issue, all right? But I think what we'll be able to look at is say that we've done something to protect ourselves with Homeland Security, and I think there's some things that need to be done yet. But I think if you take a look at the next 4 years, what you're probably going to see is the economy start to build back up and come back, as we see it's doing now. So I think in this next term of office is rebuilding the economy and getting it back to where we'd all be happy.
Mm-hmm. And the occupation of Iraq, the loss of American lives every week, the terrorist outrages, how should the country react to that? What's your read on that, and what do we need to understand about that?
Well, that's a tough one, because if it's your son or daughter that were killed, so you almost have to answer it one of two ways. But I would have to say that if we're going to fight a war of terrorism, and we have to, let there be no doubt about that. We can't just sit back like we did in days of old and just let them slap us across the face. And remember the 3,000-odd people that they killed. So having said that, there's bound to be casualties on our side. And as tough as it is for me to say that, that's a small price for us to pay for the overall feeling of a little bit more security and maybe slow down the terrorism in this country a bit. Again, I apologize to anybody and everybody who's had someone who died in there. But I can't think of any war or any incident where you don't have casualties.
And how about the price tag, the $160 billion thus far, counting this $87 billion, open-ended commitment? Is this something the country can afford and must pay?
It's probably something we can afford, and it's probably something we must pay. But I think an awful lot of us are a little bit queasy, because I'm not used to saying the word billion, much less 150, 160 billion. But I'll leave that up to those that know a heck of a lot more about it than I do.
What do you think about the tax cuts in light of this commitment? Someone, I think Senator Biden, said that if the president held his tax cuts for the top 1% for 1 year, maybe it was 2 years, I forget, you basically that comes to $87 billion. Do you think the top 1% should forego that tax cut in order to pay for this commitment so we don't charge it to our children?
Well, describing the tax cuts and who benefits from the tax cut and who doesn't benefit from the tax cut, you can take that from any different angle you want and come up with, you know, statistics lie and liars that use statistics. I would have to say that a tax cut in general is a very good idea, because I know how to spend my money a heck of a lot better than the government does. So if you cut my taxes and I have more money to spend, I'm going to spend it. I'm going to put it back in the economy. So from that point of view, a tax cut, I believe, is the right thing for everyone, because it puts the money back in the economy. What do people think the people that get the tax cut do with the money? Put it in their pillow?
Right.
You know, even if they leave it in the bank or in CDs or wherever they leave it, it still puts it back in the economy.
Don LaFave of Bow, New Hampshire, a Bush supporter, talking with our own Jack Beattie across the street from the location where President Bush spoke to the Chamber of Commerce in Manchester, New Hampshire today. Jack, it sounds like you needed some shoulder pads and combat boots out there. It's a pretty wild scene, but you've got a rock-solid George Bush supporter there. It doesn't sound like he's likely to be moved off his support.
No, I think the Republican National Committee should employ this man to go around and make speeches. I mean, I was nodding my head in agreement. He, and simply the humanity of the man to say, yes, we're paying a price, and no, I'm not paying it. My family isn't paying it, and so it's hard for me to say that we should pay it. Boy, does that drop of humanity and concern matter when you hear someone say something like that. I was really impressed by this man.
And Richard Drizner, when you listen to that Bush supporter, what's your sense of how much of the country resonates as directly to the president's messages as this New Hampshire voter obviously does? How big is the base that George Bush can count on because they just see the world the way he sees it?
Well, I think I would agree with the Republican Party ought to employ this man, but I think quite a few. Probably the Republican base is fairly strong, and one of the interesting things about the war in Iraq is that it has become a partisan marker in American politics. I don't think I can ever really recall an issue that's divided the American public so cleanly along partisan lines. So really, anyone who calls themselves a Republican is basically going to agree with just about everything this fellow said, and people who feel they're Democrats are not. And then you have the rest of the country in the middle where it's really more the economy. I don't think there's anybody out there who's not glad that Saddam Hussein is gone, that doesn't understand we're going to have to pay a price. I think the people in the military themselves are probably the strongest supporters of the president and the most willing. We owe them a great debt because they are willing to make this sort of a sacrifice.
But at this point, when you look out on the landscape, again, looking at this NPR poll, it showed President Bush in a generic presidential vote, if it happened today, against a generic Democrat, that is, it was 46% Bush, 46% the Democrat, 6% undecided. What's your sense of the president's reelection chances at this point in his term, Richard Drizner?
I think they're better, certainly better than even, because the economy is turning around. I think the numbers themselves reflect that famous map in the New York Times of where the vote comes from. I mean, I'm sitting here in San Francisco where 80% of the people just voted against the recall. I don't think that George Bush is going to get too many votes here. But in the parts of the country where he can succeed, people respond to him in a very good fashion. And we showed last time that, you know, all it would take is a little bit of improvement. Well, it would take just a little bit to defeat him. All it would take is a little bit of improvement to give him a fairly solid victory. And I think you'll see that. And the key is where it takes place. The national numbers themselves are not that meaningful.
And yet, Jack, as we heard outside the Holiday Inn where the president was today, there's going to be a lot of shouting before this match is over.
Oh, there are a lot of angry Democrats there who are angry at the president, but also who are just there to say our candidates are the best candidates and to make their case for them.
We're talking tonight about the president wading into his reelection campaign and what awaits him there. Did you hear the president today? Does he sound like a winner to you? Is George W. Bush on track for reelection or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about President Bush wading into his reelection campaign and what awaits him there. You can join the conversation. Is no regrets, no apologies the right message for the president? And what attracts you to George Bush? What repels you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from San Francisco by Richard Dresner, founder of Dresner, Wickers and Associates, a national Republican political consulting firm, and by our own Jack Beatty, who has been in the streets of New Hampshire today, within shouting distance of President Bush, where a lot of people were shouting to President Bush, both in support and in protest. We were talking about the economy just before the break. Richard Dresner, you saying that if it continues to improve, this is very strong wind in the sails of the president as he looks for reelection. George Bush spoke to his plans looking forward on the economy today. He talked about a 6-point job growth plan, and of course, job growth has been a big problem for this administration. Let's listen.
We must act boldly from this point forward to create jobs for America. So I want Congress to join me in a 6-point plan to encourage job creation. First, we must help small businesses grow and hire by controlling the high cost of health care. I have laid out a plan to do so. We must confront the junk lawsuits that are harming a lot of good and honest businesses. I have laid out a plan to do so. We must have a sound national energy policy. We must keep the lights on and make America less dependent on foreign sources of energy. We must continue to cut useless government regulations that choke job creation. We must work for a trade policy that opens up markets and levels the playing field for American workers and manufacturing companies. And we need to make sure the tax relief we passed doesn't disappear in future years. You see, when we passed tax relief, I know most Americans did not expect to see higher taxes come back through the back door. I also understand for job creation, it's important to have certainty in the tax code. People have got to be able to plan. And so if Congress is really interested in job creation, they will make the tax cuts we passed permanent.
President Bush in New Hampshire earlier today. I'm struck in this, Richard Dresner, by how words and phrases can mean many things to many people. The president talks about the high cost of health care, about sound national energy policy, useless government regulations, and earlier talking about the coalition in Iraq. One voter can look at all of these things and say President Bush is right on the money. Another can look at them and say President Bush is absolutely not producing any of these things.
Well, it's a question of perception. Is he or isn't he producing them? I think the most fascinating thing about what he said today is to compare it to what he said a week or two ago. Today he talked about the war in moral terms and why it was right for the world and for this country. Hmm. And then he talked about his domestic program. And whether you think he's produced or not, you certainly can't disagree with what he's trying to do. Whereas 2 weeks ago, when he talked about the war, he then followed up immediately and said, I need $87 billion. And I think that sends the wrong message because it says that, gee, he's really not concerned that much about the average person. So I think today you really get a sense of him trying to set priorities not just for the base but for those people who are willing to listen to him. And again, to reiterate it, American politics in a lot of ways is very partisan. And if you're a partisan, you can't hear what the other party says, no matter what the case.
Mm-hmm. Jack, on the kicker there, the president says, I want these tax cuts made permanent. I guess that's right in line with what Richard Dresner's saying. If you're just ideologically for tax cuts, it always sounds good. On the other hand, we've heard an awful lot of warnings that if those tax cuts are made permanent, a huge budget imbalance becomes permanent as well and unmanageable.
Yes, including from Nobel Prize economists on our air. On the other hand, we've had other economists say that we'll grow our way out of it. And that seemed to be the sentiment of several of the voters I talked to, that the recovery now underway was going to we would grow our way out of all debt and deficit, and that would be the solution to the deficit. But you know, this issue of reaching voters who aren't necessarily in either party, the president has got some trouble there with independent voters. Consider this: his job approval rating in the CBS Times poll last week was 51% generally, but among independents, 43%. On his handling on foreign policy, 44% overall approval, but only 38% of independents' approval. On Iraq, 47 overall, 40 independents. And on the economy, an anemic 37% by overall, but on independents, 28% approval. That's in the range of Gray Davis numbers.
Richard Drisner, what's your view this time? Does the president need that independent swing vote to win?
Without question. And they are the key voters, and they tend to be younger voters. They tend to be better informed voters. And the message today was in many ways aimed at those people by telling them, listen, I have a plan for this country. I have an agenda. It really is designed to take care of our domestic problems. And bottom line, he's got to show improvement over the next 5 or 6 months. I don't think the deficit itself at this stage of the game is too important. The long run implications of it may be cataclysmic, or they may be able to grow out of it. But in the short run, I think people are worrying about health care, about jobs, about economic growth much more than they are about the size of the deficit.
Jack, you talked to a young Bush supporter today, a student at Franklin Pierce College in Ringe, New Hampshire. His name was Alex Smith. You asked him what the president has accomplished in his first term and what he needs to do in his second term. Let's listen.
Well, most importantly, he should accomplish that we've toppled the regime in Iraq, which does, in many cases, it might not have directly supported the September 11th acts, but it does endorse them, and it has endorsed several terrorist activities. I mean, there's no denying that we toppled an evil regime, and that Bush will have to commit more money to rebuild Iraq. People were under the assumption, as soon as the war was over in Iraq, that we can just clean up and leave. We have to rebuild Iraq so they can continue to build a democracy in that region, to make the region safe for democracy for all. And that's what Bush needs to make clear. He also needs to make clear that the jobs are coming back. I believe last quarter an 8% growth showed in jobs. The economy is rebounding slowly. It takes time. Anybody who looks at a history book or an economics book knows that the president isn't directly responsible for the economy, and it always rebounds.
And yet presidents, as you know, are held responsible in elections for the economy.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's rampant in history. Every president since the beginning of time, well, since the beginning of the presidency, has been held responsible for the economy. Jimmy Carter was the victim of a bad economy. Bill Clinton was the benefactor of a good economy. And that could happen under any president. There's many circumstances besides the presidency.
And do you think the president should remind us then of what these circumstances are? The stock market crash, the tech bubble, that sort of thing?
I think it is the president's responsibility, and it's also the responsibility of the Federal Reserve Chairman and the members of Congress to remind us all of this, that the president is not directly responsible for the economy. The economy has, you can call it mood swings. It depends upon interest rates. It depends upon what jobs are in the area at that particular time.
What about the deficit, $500 billion this year, and deficits at least for the next 5 years? What do you say about that? Does that bother you?
A deficit is a problem under any president. There's no denying it. But the facts remain, September 11th still hurts us today. The economy has suffered from that. Many industries have suffered from that. And that is not George Bush's fault. The deficit will be paid down eventually. People will pay back into the system. Consumers need to regain confidence in the markets. And George Bush can do that. He just needs time. Everything is going to take time. And if we're patient, George Bush will show us that everything is going to be okay.
Young Alex Smith talking with Jack Beatty outside the president's venue in Manchester, New Hampshire today. Jack Beatty, here's a young voter saying it's not the president's fault.
Yes, and you know, he's right, isn't he? This convention in American politics that we hold presidents responsible for the economy is not economically tenable. An economist would say, well, yes, we have a deficit, and yes, the president's tax cuts contributed, I don't know, I've seen as much as a third to the deficit. But the question is, in a recession, you run a deficit. You try to stimulate the economy. So it's a very unfair, and Bush wasn't responsible for the stock market crash, the tech boom, for the corporate scandals, none of that. And he certainly wasn't responsible for 9/11, as this young man says. Yet, unfortunately, the conventions of politics are not so, what should we say, enlightened. They are, you lost jobs on your watch. In fact, the president will have lost more jobs. He will only have one rival in losing jobs, and that, unfortunately, is Herbert Hoover.
Well, if you can't hold a president responsible, on the other hand, for what happened during his 4 years, how are you supposed to judge the man? Richard Dresner, what's your sense of how much Teflon George W. Bush has at this point? Things are not going to be perfect. How much slack is the electorate likely to cut this particular president with the times he's governed in and the personality that he projects?
Well, I think the voters incorrectly, assess both blame and credit. But the problem facing the president is not whether this economy was his fault or not. It's, has he taken the steps to turn it around? And they have clearly, through the Federal Reserve and tax cuts and so on, they've pushed all the buttons. And the proof is in the pudding. If the economy continues to create jobs and continues to create them at an increasing pace, then the fact that 2 or 3 million jobs may have been lost won't be determinative, because people will say he was faced with a problem and he solved it. You can't say in politics, it's not my fault, because it may not be your fault. What the voters want to know is, what are you going to do for me tomorrow, or what have you done for me today?
If it's on your watch, it's on your watch. Ben's calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. Hi, Ben. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Well, I was actually at the Holiday Inn earlier today.
So you were in the crowd where Jack Beatty was talking with people this morning.
I was.
Great.
And I was there as someone who was protesting against President Bush and all of the economic policies that we heard outlined on those clips earlier. Just a couple of points. First, I have to definitely agree with both Jack Beatty and the other analysts that you have on there in saying that what President Bush outlines definitely does split based on whether you're a Republican or a Democrat and where your loyalties lie. I, for example, hear what he's saying, and it's anathema to me, thinking about tax cuts and those methods of, what he believes are methods of job creation and wealth creation.
Right.
I see as defunding the federal government and ultimately leading to recession and depression, and that the president is really reaching to further motivate his base by going after really the core of the Republican Party platform as a way of getting out the vote.
So, Ben, you were out there shouting against the president today. Then let me ask you, do you see in the Democratic lineup of contenders the challenger who can articulate this critique of the president and unseat him?
Well, I believe at this point in time, the Democrats, from the way you've been talking about the support of the Democratic candidates, it sounds as though we are divided as a party in terms of who to support and how to support them. But
well, that's clearly undecided at this point. Sure.
However, I think that once the process moves forward and a nominee is selected, you'll see an incredibly united front among Democrats, because as opinion polls have shown, with huge numbers of undecideds who say they want a winner, the people who are motivated to vote, whether they're left-leaning independents or Democrats, want to beat President Bush.
So you're a Democrat coming into next year. What's your confidence level that this president can be pushed out by a Democratic contender, Ben?
I'm confident that he can be pushed out if things continue going in this direction, if he continues to push the policies that he has, because they clearly, as shown by the recent polls at NPR and I think the CBS poll that you mentioned, have shown, are isolating those key independent swing voters
So you're ready to bet on a Democrat. Ben, thanks very much for your call. Jack in the Streets today, you were talking with people on both sides of the line expressing their views out there. You talked with Elizabeth Cody from Newton, Massachusetts, who was up in Manchester, New Hampshire. You asked her, what is your biggest criticism of President Bush? Let's listen to what she had to say.
George Bush hasn't succeeded in diplomacy, and he has not succeeded in turning the economy around. And he has not developed anything sophisticated as far as the national health care plan is concerned.
The president does have a prescription drug plan. It's being debated.
My son
now.
Is 21 years old, and he has to pay $3,800 a year for a health care plan. And he makes, at 21 with his first job, about $18,000 a year. You can't live in the Boston area on $18,000 a year and pay $3,800 a year in health care. Can't do it.
And you're not bothered by the fact that he's the political problem of taking back all those Bush tax cuts to pay for this?
The tax cut for my son's income level was $400 a year. Put that against $3,200 a year.
Pretty strong argument.
Pretty strong argument. Pretty clear. Pretty obvious.
Jack Beatty talking with Elizabeth Cody today outside the president's speech venue in Manchester, New Hampshire. And she's looking at her own family's problems with, let's say, health care payments, their health insurance payments, Jack. And she's saying it just doesn't add up. She's against this president.
Yes, and strongly for Dr. Dean. She was as strong a supporter of Dr. Dean's as I've heard. And she was basically saying, yes, Dean wants to pull back the Bush tax cuts, but he wants with them to insure everybody up to age 24 so that that interregnum that we as parents of young adults face between the time when they finish college and the time at 25 or so when they get their first long pants job, that interregnum would be filled by the Dean health care plan, and it would cost essentially the Bush tax cuts.
Richard Drisner, as you look at George W. Bush at this point in his presidency, unique circumstances with the attack of 9/11, yet there have been a lot of elections that have come and gone before. Do you see a precedent here for where he stands in the public's esteem and how the country is divided around him in terms of earlier presidents and their reelection bids?
Well, I think it's there's no connection with wartime presidents and reelection or success at the polls, at least not very often in this country. And all you have to do is look, no further than the president's father to see what can happen.
So a war doesn't buy reelection?
Not at all. I mean, I would suppose if 9/11 happened, 30 days before the election, that might be one thing. I think the really unique thing about this president and the country at this time, and you kind of, in the interviews you did, you really brought it out, because these people are very articulate and very mm-hmm. partisan, is if you're sitting in New York City or San Francisco or Boston, you will have trouble finding anybody who has anything nice to say about President Bush. And on the other side of the coin, if you go out into the Midwest and the greater part of this country, you'll have a hard time finding people who say bad things about it. If you're sitting in Texas, certainly, or Florida or Arkansas or Iowa or places like that, there are far more supporters of the president. And it's just not possible to look at one place and say, gee, this is representative.
And yet, Jack stood outside one Holiday Inn in Manchester today and saw people on both sides. We won't put it forward as straight representative, but it's a dappled picture out there. We've got to take a short break. We're talking about President Bush wading into his reelection campaign and what awaits him there. You can join the conversation. Is the president's strong and steadfast persona a vote getter, a winner this time, or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about President Bush wading into his reelection campaign and what awaits him there. My guests are Richard Drisner, joining us from San Francisco. He's a national Republican political consultant. And our own Jack Beatty, who was in the streets of New Hampshire today, outside a venue where the president was speaking in Manchester, New Hampshire, talking with voters who came down on both sides in the big partisan standoff that's setting up for the reelection year, for the campaign year ahead. A question for you: whose narrative of what's going on in the world today is most compelling, most believable to you, Bush's or his opponents? President Bush concluded today with a reminder of the defining moment of his presidency, 9/11, and the whole framework of how he sees the world around that.
The war on terror has brought hardship and loss to our country, beginning with the grief of September the 11th. Let us also remember that the first victory in this war came on that same day, on a hijacked plane bound for the nation's capital. Those men and women on Flight 93 took action, served their country knowing they would die. I found incredible courage in their final moments to save the lives of others. In those moments and many times since, terrorists have learned that Americans are courageous and will not be intimidated. We will fight them with everything we have. Few are called to show the kind of valor seen on Flight 93 or on the field of battle. Yet all of us do share a calling to be strong in adversity and to be unafraid in danger. We Americans have come through so much together, and we have much yet to do. If we're patient, united, determined, our nation will prosper and our nation will win. May God bless you all.
President George W. Bush on the re-election campaign trail in Manchester, New Hampshire today. Jim's calling from Waterford, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Good evening. The reason I'm calling is, and first let me say where I'm coming from here. I had a George Bush sign in my yard. I gave money to the George Bush campaign.
4 years ago or 3 years ago?
Four years ago, mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm very disappointed. I feel as though I've been betrayed. We got the president that I wanted, and now we've got bigger government. I wanted smaller government. I was told I was going to get smaller government. I believed I was going to get smaller government. And I realized that if I don't vote for George Bush next time around, it's probably going to end up being a spoiler vote, ending up with a Democrat in the office. But I'm afraid that he is really alienating a lot of his base, his hard conservative base, that when they see him putting his arm around a Kennedy, it just makes my stomach roll.
So you're a hardcore conservative. You want smaller government. You count on Bush to deliver it, and you feel like he's let you down.
He has absolutely. We've got the biggest government expansion we've seen. We've got more government, and I wanted less government. I believed George Bush when he told me that he wanted smaller government.
Jim, we've got it loud and clear. Richard Dresner, let me put it to you. How widespread do you think this perspective is from the conservative angle of people saying, no, it's not a no new taxes pledge that was broken, but the government's not smaller under this president?
I think it's extremely rare. The president's popularity among Republicans is well up into the 90s. You just don't find conservatives who are upset about it. I think the really defining thing for the president is he was confronted with major problems, but because of 9/11, because of the economy. The question is, has he taken the steps to begin to solve it? And he's pushed every button when it comes to what he can do with the economy, and he's shown a resolve when it comes to foreign policy.
So you're not worried about his conservative base?
Oh, absolutely not. And ultimately, it's going to come down to the proof being in the pudding. Do conditions and does the situation improve in Iraq? Does the economy begin to produce jobs?
But though the president's rhetoric today would seem to be the kind of rhetoric that his managers, maybe Karl Rove, hopes can bridge him over, even if things don't get entirely better. He's saying we're on the right track in tough times. So stick with me here. Jack, you talked with people today who are not all Bush supporters, obviously, including one Peter Sullivan of Manchester, New Hampshire. You asked him, who's a Lieberman supporter who happened to be there. You asked him why he supports Senator Lieberman over other Democrats as the best alternative to President Bush. Let's just hear that for some perspective.
Senator Lieberman is part of that Democratic tradition that goes back to Kennedy, Truman, Roosevelt, where the use of military power is sometimes necessary to promote American values and American interests. What worries me is that someone like Governor Dean, who portrays himself as the, you know, the, some of the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, he really isn't. He's turning his back on 50 or 60 years of history. You know, the Democratic Party, in its best incarnation, has never been afraid to use the military to stand up for American values. You saw that with Bill Clinton in Bosnia and Kosovo. You saw that with President Kennedy in the Bay, in the Cuban Missile Crisis. You saw that with Harry Truman and FDR during World War II. That's the real Democratic tradition.
And the subsequent events in Iraq, the occupation, the constant death and attrition of American soldiers, the costs and so on, how does that weigh on his judgment? Does this vindicate his judgment, or does this make it seem, you know, supporting President Bush less wise than it might have?
Well,
I think what you have to look at is the key difference between Senator Lieberman's position and President Bush's position was that Senator Lieberman, well before the commencement of hostilities in this conflict, was speaking on the need for a coherent endgame. What is our post-war policy going to be? With Bush, you don't see that. It was always focused on getting rid of Saddam Hussein without any real thought as to what would come next. With Joe Lieberman, there was an emphasis on the need to rebuild the country afterwards, to nurture democratic institutions in post-war Iraq. And now you're seeing the results of the administration's lack of foresight on that front. And again, it comes down to that democratic internationalism. With a President Lieberman, you would have seen a greater effort to involve international institutions and organizations, to involve our allies within the United Nations and within NATO, and they would be on board in the rebuilding effort right now. With George Bush, with the cowboy diplomacy, you don't have that.
Jack Beatty, there's Peter Sullivan of Manchester, New Hampshire, you were talking with, and it's an interesting comment to put up against President Bush's big conclusion that we just heard in his speech there in earlier today. And Peter's kind of drawing what you can sort of hear, President Bush posing as the fighting president, Peter Sullivan saying Joe Lieberman, his preferred candidate in this case, might be more equipped with the coherent end game. And the president's rhetoric kind of suggests that the end game is a total victory.
Well, a total victory, I guess, would mean, I think Secretary Rumsfeld has said, when fear is gone. Well, that's going to be a long time, isn't it? Total victory in Iraq, I don't know quite what that would be. But I think that this was a very interesting way of connecting the sort of tough Democrats of the past to Iraq and saying this is very much in the line of that tradition. And Governor Dean is in the sort of McGovern tradition, if you will, of criticizing the war. Of course, Governor Dean was, this is all about Iraq. He did support Afghanistan. And I think this point about the end game, I mean, you know, obviously, if the president had worked diplomacy sufficiently, we wouldn't, first of all, be bearing the practically the exclusive brunt of the casualties, and we wouldn't be bearing the almost the crushing and exclusive burden of the cost.
Judy's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
This is Jenny Gregory, and I'm calling in regard to the woman who called early about her son with the health care.
Yes.
And I am in the same situation. I am 21 years old. I deal with the same thing. But it's President Bush. He has the entire economy looking at him. Everyone's looking at him, and he can't do everything. We have enough war going on in our with other countries right now. We don't need to have war with President Bush.
So are you saying now, he should be given an automatic pass? The war in Iraq, the war on terrorism is of such a nature that there shouldn't be a critical assessment of his performance?
No, that is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is now is our time to work with him. He wants to hear from us. He's not going against us. One man said about judging him. if we sit here and judge our president, how can we make anything better? How can we work together as a team, as the United States of America, which we always say, oh, we work together, we stand together, yet go against our president?
But, Jenny, isn't that sort of baked into the system that Americans are supposed to consider how their elected officials are doing and pass judgment and work with whoever sits in that office, not just one man?
Passing judgment is not the answer. I think working with him, when a kid has a problem or somebody has a problem and you go against them, they get defensive. But when you work with them, they're willing to work with you. And I think President Bush may be willing to work with us. He is our president.
Jenny, we've got it. Thanks for your call. Richard Dresner, how strong do you think this sentiment will be? And President Bush, of course, pulls no punches on it today. He says, we are at war. We continue to be at war. What portion of the American electorate will be drawn to the president simply because of the sense of threat that's in the air?
Well, I think quite a few, and he's done a good job of it. I think you actually said something earlier which really hit the nail on the head. The message today is the message for the campaign, and it's a fighting message, and I think it's the right message. What the president is saying is, look, we've had some really tough problems here, a war, a terrorist attack, an ailing economy. And I have a solution to it, and you have to stick with me. And what he's saying here is that he expects things to get better, both in Iraq and in the economy, and relatively soon. And I think when you look at the recent news, things have begun to improve. So, you know, this is not going to be an easy election for him by any means. But I think he certainly sounded the right note today.
And Jack, what's your sense of that note? You know, we're hearing from – you heard today from voters from all over the map, but the poll numbers have not been holding steady or going up. They've been going down for George W. Bush.
Yes, they have. But I do think he has a powerful message, and I think Jenny was picking it up. That is, we are under threat, and there's an understandable impulse. We certainly all felt it after September 11th to rally around the nation. To be united. But that impulse is at war with our political necessities. Right through the Civil War, the election was held with rebel armies busting into Pennsylvania. There was a bitter election campaign fought for the Democrats. In World War II, there were bitter campaigns fought against President Roosevelt. That's the American tradition. We want to be united, but we don't convene politics even for the direst necessities or worst wars.
Let's get one more call. Bill's calling from Hollis, New Hampshire. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hey, this discussion for a while, and I'm one of those middle-of-the-road independent voters you guys were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, not a Democrat, not a Republican, and even though I didn't vote for Bush, 2000, I know a lot of Republicans and a lot of my friends, who are very angry with him, and I'm pretty angered the president too. We just kind of think he's, you know, he hasn't done much for us. We a lot of my friends who have lost jobs, live in high tech, you know, here in southern New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
I know Republicans that are organizing for Wesley Clark, and you know, and I just think, and I've been talking to a few of my friends about this too. And the president has come across as arrogant on the campaign trail, and I've seen a lot of these candidates come around, you know, for the last 20 years or so, And he just also, his policies seem to be kind of reckless, you know, foreign policy and the economy.
Bill, we've got it. Our time is short, but you've got two tough words there, reckless and arrogant. Richard Dresner, how much does George Bush have to watch out for that?
I don't think he's been either reckless or, you know, whatever the
other. But there may be a fine line between that fighting pose and the kind of arrogance, and clearly there's a not insubstantial streak of Americans who think there is something reckless going on in Iraq.
But the president set the tone today for what people should use to judge him, and that is, am I beginning to solve these problems? And if the situation in Iraq gets worse, if the economy were to get worse, he'll have a heck of a tough time getting reelected. But to me, it looks like he's taken the right steps. And I mean, you're seeing the improvement in the economy now, and you're beginning to see some hope that other countries in the world will help us out in Iraq as well.
And maybe some smart markers in those speeches today. Richard Dresner, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Richard Dresner, founder of Dresner Wickers and Associates, a Republican consulting firm in San Francisco. And Jack, thanks so much for the reports from Manchester.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.